but not say real aid. I was asking you how you navigated in a night attack.
Well, navigation, of course, is tremendously important. You all follow the chap in front, and he would probably have a white disc or something on his back, and there was some sound which you could generally pick up and say, "Dog pound." And of course, you would have tapes as far as you could. You have the intelligence section who would go on a compass bearing. Remember, you could illuminate compass. Of course, CMOS decided when you got to your objective.
How could you measure distance at night? That's the thing, isn't it? So you would have a man beside you counting his steps?
Yes, or you would count your steps, or that in front of him, and probably the intelligence section who would be taking you up to your objective would count. So it had to be very, very carefully arranged. Occasionally, of course, you were sent a flare if that went up. And if you wanted security to get to your objective, then those airports are not used. But they were very useful once you could use them.
Presumably, once you've got onto the objective, you could signal by a flare that you'd arrived.
Yes.
And also,
did
you use flares at all for illumination to see if the enemy were lurking? What was the reason for doing this particular attack at night? Do you recollect?
I think that we wanted the night attack, and we thought that the particular hill was in enemy hands. And to the best of my knowledge, there wasn't anybody there.
Were there any signs that it had been in enemy hands? I mean, was it a particularly bare approach or anything of that sort that might have...
I think, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. We decided a knife attack anyway, which was the only time I have done a knife patrol at Sina, which is interesting. I've talked about that, I think. But it was the only time we did a knife attack.
But a patrol at night is the normal thing, isn't it, for reconnaissance purposes?
Yes.
But
I took a fighting patrol out at Sina, which is quite interesting. Mm-hmm.
But a night attack is something quite different, isn't it? A different scale.
Yes, very organised. Yes.
What scale were you doing this? Was this a battalion attack?
Yes. Mm. Yeah. The battalion was by then it's no longer commanded by Jeff Larson.
What could you see from your new objective that was of any importance once you got it and the dawn came up?
What could you see?
I was asking about the value of the objective, yes, and what you could see from it.
Well, to be honest, I cannot remember that there was a steepish hill and would have been held on a forward slope, which was probably not very good tactics. And may have had some observations on the top, but they may have had troops standing on what would be a forward slope, which was not very normal in those days.
Not
tactics in those days, it would be held on the worst slope, ready to jump up and run forward when you could.
How far down the reverse slope would you be from the military crest in that sort of defensive position?
Depends on how steep the hill was. But if it was very steep, you could get very close to the top as you were on Ito. Very close to the top.
Because the Germans there were only just the other side of the crest, weren't they?
Yes, they were.
And presumably, though, you would have observation posts on the forward slope so that you could use your artillery in support.
Yes, we'd try to have observation posts, yes.
You mentioned that you encountered in this area German tanks dug in.
Yes.
To presumably they were they there to give fire support to infantry, or were they the mainstay of the defence?
They were the main defence. They were just there. The tank was dug in and not supposed to be moved to the end of it.
It's a static tank. How could you deal with those?
It's totally difficult because they are the German tank, maybe just some tiger tank. They've got the thing they call tiger tanks. So they're a very big armor and a very efficient gun. And our anti-tank guns couldn't do much. But we did have SP guns, self-propelled, which could be used in the tank area. But we needed a pretty heavy form of explosive. Really, the best answer was probably from the air.
Were you able to call in airstrikes in support that stage?
Not online level, but we could.
But presumably you could put in a request for air support, and then at what level would that go off to the Air Force?
Air support would be from not lower than battalion.
Did you ever see any forward air controllers in your area?
No. But when I was a prisoner in hospital, I may have already talked about this. We've come to that. I saw a British plane coming and drop a bomb on the hospital, very close to the hospital, on some tactical target. I saw the bomb leaving the airplane. You know, just not having been in the UK, not having been bombed, quite interesting to see this.
Was it the first time you'd seen a bombing take place?
I saw it broadly, yes.
So if you got really held up by dug in German tanks, the answer was either to bring up your self-propelled anti-tank guns, or call on the Air Force.
Yes.
But that would have to go up through battalion and above.
Yes.
Now there was a mixed unit in Italy at the time called the Rover Paddy, which was mixed Air Force and Army, and they were doing.
Yes.
You know, forward air control. Did you ever hear about them, their activities? Well, they often did go forward to company locations because it was necessary to actually control the support that was given.
There was a force called Quarter Force.
Tell me about that.
It was a mixed cavalry organization. Commanded by a chap called Andrew Horsford Porter, who was quite a well-known character in 12 Lancers. And they were doing sort of rendering jobs along the front.
Mm. Now this was a unit that had evolved from a mobile operations room unit that had been developed in North Africa.
Yes.
And it had gradually developed the idea that the closer the forward air controller got to the front line, the better.
Yes.
And in order to ensure that they understood each other, they mixed the unit, so it was a mixture of Air Force and Army personnel at all levels.
Yes.
And they were under the control of the Army headquarters, but they were deployed down to Corps, and they would go out in small teams to wherever they were needed.
Yes. No, I don't know worthwhile.
Did you ever get effective air support for your company?
I don't remember if we ever did, I can't put my finger on that one. But we had our own support in mortars and air mortars.
What about your artillery?
Well, we had our own artillery.
If you were in need of artillery support, how long would it take for the shells started arriving on the target.
Well, if I had a forward observation of the visitor, I would expect a matter of minutes.
Did you have forward observation officers with you on a normal basis?
Probably there was only one of the
But would he come forward and
he would be
yes.
I mean, I had one obviously at Gunther, like I said. Jeff or Dick Clint, who was someone's doctor.
Was he the normal chap who would be with the battalion, or was he an additional?
Yes, he was always a regiment, which is if possible. Yeah, they could be with this regiment. In fact, it was a big field which we had known. Since I started as a surgeon, this field were always DCLI were commanded by Chap or Schreiber, who became Governor General of Malta eventually.
Did you ever find that they were not able to support you because of the lie of the land in eastern Italy?
I suppose that must have been possible for you.
I mean, there were some.
Well, some were in the area of water rather than the field. I had a limited capacity for putting it around.
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, I know.
And do you know if they ever had difficulties of actually getting up into position from which they could fire because of the difficulties of the terrain?
Yes, I think they did. Yeah. Quite often. You can see that, of course, we had an enormous contingency for the biggest 17 ever. Alligator was nothing to what we had. The guns were wheel to wheel. And we had the other end, which is wheel to wheel, in the circle.
Did you get the impression by this stage, I mean, you've said that at the Incontro, the Germans were not really in force, it was a scratch unit, and once you'd got into them through the wall, they'd collapsed. What about the Germans on the other side of the Apennines, on the Adriatic front? Were they still fighting hard, or were they beginning to fade away and go through the motions?
They were beginning to fade away. They're not without the fight.
You mentioned that you were going forward and the ground was rough and you did a night attack. And
yes.
Were there any other attacks which you remember in detail before you got to the Ronco?
Well, obviously a casino. And there were other ones.
But I'm thinking about after you'd gone over to the Adriatic side, after the Incontro, when you were advancing up.
After that, we came rally to Ronco, which was a third one to be.
What happened there?
We got taken to the
well, tell me how. What was going on? You were.
Ronco is a very fast game. With fairly hilly country on our side, but a large flat area on the land side, which is the north side. And we were ordered to do a night attack across the River Ronco. They had a tank crossing, obviously, with the community. And the first tank to try and get across got shot up. So they blocked that. And we went across, two companies went across on the footbridge, which I was one block. And it's falling again, it's very dark, and we got in the buildings. And the Germans drove up, and we had these tanks outside. and we run cancer tanks. Check all through the machine gun, I think we wounded. And say com. So we didn't have much alternative but to com. So we com with it, with our hands up through the rain. And this is where I had an interview with the German candidate, one of the major. He had guys, he was in bed, four places of bed, cross off. And often we drink, snack, and I said, thank you, drink a drink, thank you very much. And he wanted to know a few things, but couldn't do very much, because he couldn't move himself. So, myself, David Rutledge, great friend of mine, Maltese officer, Kevin Spencer. I'm just trying to think of Maltese officer's name. Anyway, he was a Maltese. Jack Paul Wisdom, one of my two commanders. They're all interviewed eventually by the German general commander, whose name was Hopper. And the interview was just as it would be on a film.
You're saying that the interview with the German divisional commander was just like a
it was exactly like that with the scene of the black and white film. He was surrounded by the scum. He was a grey haired elderly man with a very red face. The room was scented.
Scented?
Yes.
What kind of scent?
Well, quite pleasant.
Germanic. This sounds like a description of an interview between Biggles and von Stahlheim.
Yes.
Von Stahlheim was always slightly scented, as
yes.
I remember.
Yes.
Do you remember what he wanted to know, what he asked you?
He knew everything.
Oh, did he know everything, really?
He said, you are Major Notte, Bossy Father, up in Crete. How is Colonel Harding? I didn't answer that one because Harding is the senior of the senior. Tony Spencer had been to Oxford, I think, and he said, you were at, you just saw the rain, Oxford, Tony, he said. David Rutledge, who looked, God bless him, as my oldest friend, cited our finger, said that was nothing. Houston, I think, said nothing. And then our Maltese officer, I have to fill this in, it was terrible, I can't remember his name. Frank, we call him, but he had a really. He said to him, you come from more, you're Italian, but I was a bit worried because the Italians and the Maltese just didn't get on. We were a bit worried about that, but all was well. At that time, we were in the stable with some other officers, one of whom was a good friend of mine, and I still meet occasionally, called Ronnie Cashel. And I, we shot to the show and had orders, and they thought it was time I was taken away.
Had you been given medical treatment?
No, not really.
Had you been given any first aid?
Not really. I had a first aid dressing. I mean, it's a key room, it's just a bit over. Not really. They did a bit later on, so they took me away from them. And David Rutledge, who at that time, a lady when he wasn't wounded, went to a big camp and had a very dull time in the war, while I had a most interesting time. And I was extremely lucky to be lucky with it and not wear this ghastly camp. There's not a lot to tell you about this. Shall I go on?
Go on.
I was taken in a pernium. There were two trap down in my saw, and a pernium trap, which I was delighted because I mean, I didn't think the Air Force would worry about the pernium trap anymore. It wouldn't be shot at. We went to a sort of first field dressing station where I sat talking to a German who I only realized was dead after this, so he wasn't much good. And he was on a stretcher. We were then put in an ambulance where the Italian partisans had unzipped the tires and they put water in the petrol or something. And it was a very uncomfortable line.
Had you been given any treatment at that dressing station?
I don't think they did, no.
You just left there and then picked up.
We did go to a casualty care station,
yes.
Where I was offered an injection by a warrant officer, because the young warrant officer was a pretty powerful medical chair. And I refused it. He said, no discipline in the British Army. I said, I couldn't care less. I don't want one of the whole meeting. And,
do you know what he was offering you in the needle?
I don't know, that's why.
He didn't explain what he was trying to do.
Probably been a good thing, and it didn't really sweet, but I think I was tired enough anyway. But then somewhere along the line, and I think it could have been an hour, I was operated on, where they put a tube thing through my and so on, and they took a Tommy gun bullet out of the chair next to me and held it up and said, what is that? And I said, what's the spider? What is this? Anyway, I was then on the move, things were easier. We went across the River Po, very interesting. We went on a seawall ferry. You have a chain across the river, it's a fast one there. And you go down the chain and when you get to the middle, they have an outboard motor which
pushes across.
And we then went to this fascinating hospital, Britannia, Turnley was a spa, where I was with one commercial who had been hit by a blast that was mentioned. I had jaundice in the room, didn't I?
How do you manage to pick up jaundice?
Easy. It was whatever hepatitis it was, picked up by the officers because they share cups in the nest.
So you're passing it on to each other?
The troops didn't get it because they probably just had their own mugs and then maybe they'll stand up. So but I got there. And the next thing then was in this hospital. Being officers, we were given treatment, we were helping ourselves, mommy and I. The commandant came up to us and said, would we get parole? And so we decided we would get parole whilst we were in his hospital. He told me about what happened in his life. He didn't see much point in giving not very good, and it made life extremely comfortable for us. We had meals brought up by waiters with, they had everything that we had considered superfood. Two waiters, one came from Norwich and Lloyd, his name was Hurston.
He was a German waiter.
Oh, good, yeah.
This was a German hospital, you were
in. Yes, it was. They were Germans from the easy part of Germany, and what's the part? They were like cows, you know, they were like the Nazis. Very good hospital for concerned.
Would it be the Rhineland, that area they were from?
Yes, Latinate. They were a good lot.
If a chap was in the Lloyd, he was possibly from Hamburg, that area.
Yes.
Schleswig-Holstein area.
His home was down in the south.
Bavaria.
They were nice lot. So we said we'd give for a watch on your hospital. And so we decided to have a plan. Anyway, these places were really good. They paid church for us, they gave me pizzas, and they bought other food. A very nice doctor called Dennis Sample, who I still in touch with, from Munich. And he was going to Venice. And I had a few minutes to ask him whether I could come with him. And I said, come again.
He didn't want you going off as a tourist.
And I did go to Venice. It was many, many years later. It was foggy, so I missed my chance, but it's not that surprising. So they said, well, now you want to shave, you send a barber up. And he said, you don't want a German barber, you want an Italian barber. So they agreed to that. So the Italian barber came up and he spoke enough Italian to the man. When we left the hospital, we would walk out of the hospital and through the train into the darkness the other side, where we would be, this chap would be with all his friends, because it didn't work like that for you many of the quickly. But I did go to a lovely concert. They all stood up and did that, except us. And we were in the front row. It was great.
Sounds like you'd fallen amongst extremely friendly enemies.
No, they were charming. Anyway, we got into this play.
This was this after you had you fully recovered by that stage, or
we had to be moved. We were considered well enough. We were
yes.
Walking wounded, sitting gagged.
But I'd be right in thinking that your wound was not really troubling you that much. It was, yeah. Would have been the jaundice that was the real trouble.
Yeah. Incidentally, we had thermal baths, and that got to be a good thing in the tables, but we survived.
What did they?
Ronnie hadn't got jaundice. He'd got
blast injury, you were saying. But you had a bullet wound in the shoulder. What had actually caused the wound to your shoulder? Was it a did you not know?
When I was just before we captured, I felt as though somebody hit me with a crowbar and I sat down. It's like a great thump.
And you were shot through the back of the shoulder. Was this when you were?
I did a racket for 1 month.
Yeah. Was this when you were in the houses?
Yes.
And it came out of the night.
Yes, I don't know. I wish I could find out. I don't know about. Somebody had a pop over and didn't call me. It was a bad shot.
May have been a random shot.
Maybe. Yes. I was certainly lucky. I mean, could have finished me.
But you said it was a clean wound, so yeah. How long did it take to actually start mending? And
a week or two, I suppose. But it didn't give me any trouble. It was the jaundice, really.
Yes.
I mean, obviously, I was getting the most of it. And I couldn't see any obvious thing in my head. I was uncomfortable driving, I followed the rapids going down to Woodstone.
Quite.
So
they decided they were going to move you. Where were they going to take you? Back to Germany or somewhere else in Italy?
We went from against it in this train. We went right up to the borders of Czechoslovakia, Poland, and Germany.
So your plan for escape didn't work. What happened?
They weren't there.
The Italians weren't there.
And what did happen, and I made that a long story, but it was quite amusing. I was sitting in a carriage filled with people who were working for the Germans, they were Wesley Cairns, and there were a horrid little unlocks in charge. And they all went to sleep, and I pretended to go to sleep, and whilst they were asleep, I got up, walked along the corridor, got into the loo, locked the door, started to work on the window. I might have got out, but the train was moving too fast. They all fell to it. They were running up and down the corridor shouting, Fluger.
What does that mean?
He's gone.
Ah. He's fled, yes.
I got them, basically realizing the loo, and then they got a really good pressure up. And this is the case, and the whole lot came in with great talent. So after that, I went to see Nathan Wade.
All of them.
I think so.
Was he your only escort? You got, how many of you were there? There were two of you going on the train.
I didn't know where long he was. He wasn't there.
He wasn't, so it was just you on the train.
On this particular day, absolutely. I don't know where he was.
And you'd got a German NCO who was supposed to be.